Hi, it's Patrick here, and today's pod is about dementia, what it may tell us about language acquisition and language loss. There's a G8 summit taking place right now on dementia in London, probably the most high-profile meeting on the disease that's ever been held. Here's British Prime Minister David Cameron at the summit's opening.
It doesn't matter whether you're in London or Los Angeles, in rural India or in urban Japan, this disease steals lives, it wrecks families, it breaks hearts, and that is why all of us here are so utterly determined to beat it.
Now, on the big show, we talked with Alison Ray. She's a professor of linguistics at the Center for Language and Communication at Cardiff University. She's been researching language and dementia. Here she is in conversation with the big show's Marco Werman.
The cases of dementia are growing year on year, and there are some really quite alarming statistics for the amount of dementia there will be in the world in another 20, 30 years' time. One of the things that's been brought out at the G8 summit today is the immense cost to society that's going to bring with a greater number of older people as people are living longer. That's a massive burden on the working population, which will be very hard to cover. The other thing I think we need to recognize that it's not just about a financial pressure. It's about the social impact of dementia on our future social life across the world, that this is going to change the way we see ourselves and see the older people around us. And it's something that we need to manage in a social way so that we understand more about what the disease does to people and how we can best manage it.
Now, you study dementia through the prism of language. How does that come into play and what are you trying to figure out?
There are lots of things that one needs to look at in terms of dementia, and clearly one of the most important things is finding out how to prevent it, how to cure it, how to deal with it through drugs and through various treatments. But there's a whole other side to dementia, which is to do with understanding how we as society can work with people who have dementia to try and make their lives as good as they can be. And what we have here is that language will change in the course of dementia because of the impact of brain damage directly and also because of loss of memory. It makes it more difficult to be able to communicate effectively. And that makes a huge difference to people with dementia. They can't express themselves so well, but they will also lose confidence in their ability to express themselves. And so that will change the way that they interact with people in all sorts of other ways. They may not want to speak so much. They may be frightened of speaking, of making a mistake, and so on. But in the meantime, you've also got the carers who will get confused about how best to deal with somebody who's not communicating quite so well. So what are they supposed to say? What are you supposed to do when somebody asks you the same question over and over again? How are you supposed to deal with that? And we need a lot of research into the ways of supporting carers in managing the symptoms of dementia, because if the carers can be helped to do that, then they can open the door on better communication for the people with dementia who perhaps can't help themselves quite so much anymore.
So people with dementia, do they forget words or do they lose the ability to construct sentences? What happens?
Well, both of those. They do forget words. One of the first things that one sees in early stage dementia is difficulties finding words, though we have to be careful here because there are lots of reasons why one can have difficulty finding words. In fact, we all have difficulty finding words from time to time.
Right.
But yeah, it is one of the symptoms. And what will happen then is a person with dementia will try various ways to compensate for that. And they will draw on the strategies that they've always used all the way through their lives, things that we all do. So when we can't think of a word, we will come up with a little filler expression like, you know, or something like that, and so on. When we can't construct a complex sentence because it's a little bit too much like hard work, we're a bit distracted, we're a bit tired, we'll find ways of putting the sentence together in ways that don't require so much forward planning and so on. So what we do with the language when we're researching dementia language, what we do with it is to look at the way that in dementia, people draw on these strategies that they've always had, but use them more and use them in new ways. So one is looking at how a person with dementia might still speak quite fluently, but when you hear them speak, you can't quite work out what they're talking about because instead of using the words you would expect, they're using little filler words like something or it rather than the thing that they really want to refer to. Or they're using a lot of formulaic expressions so that they can say six or seven words, but it's so automatic that it doesn't take a lot of processing. So you get a lot of little routine expressions like see you later or thank you very much. And these kinds of things will get used more and more. And they will also get more into repetition, sometimes because they've forgotten that they said the thing before or they've forgotten the answer to the question they got. But sometimes because it's the easiest thing to say because they want to carry on speaking, because speaking is so important to us as a way of interacting socially.
There's been some really interesting research, I guess, that's come out of the effect of dementia on people who speak several languages, polyglots.
Yes, this isn't research I've done myself, but I've read something about it. One of the things that has been claimed a number of times in recent years is that people who speak more than one language may have a certain amount of resistance or some advantage when it comes to the development of the symptoms of dementia. So it won't make any difference probably to the fact that they start to develop, say, the brain damage that comes with Alzheimer's, but it might make a difference to when that starts to show in their behavior, in their linguistic behavior particularly. And the argument there is that when you're used to using more than one language, you have several different ways that you can get to express the same idea. You're used to doing that all the time. And therefore, it gives you more different routes to get round an obstacle that might come up if you can't find the word that you want at the time you need it. Mm. However, there is other research that I've heard about quite recently where people have said, well, no, we've just studied some people who are monolinguals and other people who are bilinguals, and we can't find any effect of that kind. What that shows us really is that we've got very exciting hints about research. From research that's been done so far, we know some things, but we don't know enough. And we just need to do more research into this to find out why it is we sometimes get an effect and other times we don't.
I was intrigued by something you posted on the G8 Dementia Summit website, which is, you write, a key way to help practitioners, people with dementia, and our wider society break out of entrenched behaviors and attitudes is to understand what works in other cultures and why. So international collaborations are essential. That would imply, Allison, that there's a lot to learn from other cultures when it comes to dementia.
I think of all the diseases that we might want to research, this is one where we really, really do need to look at other cultures. That's unquestionably the case. I think it's the case that in the US and in Europe, in the UK, we have a particular way in our society of dealing with the idea of dementia. We view our older people in certain kinds of ways, and we are, for all sorts of very understandable ways, very frightened of dementia as something that may come to us and to our loved ones. Now, clearly there are good reasons for that, but I think we don't always see the extent to which that is partly a cultural choice about how we view dementia. And in other cultures in the world, they don't see older people in that way, and they don't necessarily see dementia as being such a huge problem. It's simply something that you deal with in people if they have it. And so they don't make it into this kind of monster, which is very frightening, which means that you want to push people away or put them into care homes rather than being able to care for them more in the community and so on. And I think we do need to look at some other cultures where they still know how to look after their older people in different ways and see how that impacts on the development and the progression of dementia. One of the things that clearly isn't good for a person with dementia is to sit them in a chair in a care home and not talk to them all day. That's clearly not good, and nobody wants to do that, but it does happen to an awful lot of people, certainly in the UK, and I would guess also in the US and in various other Western countries. In some Eastern countries, Far Eastern countries particularly, maybe, that wouldn't be the case. Certainly not to the same extent. And I think we need to look at how that might be impacting on a better experience for people with dementia in those countries.
Do you suspect that there is a correlation between the way cultures treat their aging populations and the prevalence of dementia?
Well, I don't know about the prevalence of the underlying causes of dementia. No, I mean, I think that's down to a mixture of genetics, biological factors, maybe diet, who knows? There are other guys who research that stuff. But I do think that there are ways in which dementia can be made worse for people because of the way we deal with it. I did a study a few years ago where I observed somebody with dementia who was still working. She was a retired opera singer, and she was running a weekend masterclass for singers who had paid money to come and learn how to sing with her. Now, because she was in a situation of great authority and because people wanted to be there and wanted to learn from her, she was able to deal with the problems she had in her communication in a quite extraordinary way, because everybody was rooting for her and supporting her in getting her message out. Now, had she been in a context where basically she was sat in a corner and people say, oh, well, she's got dementia, there's no point talking to her, then think how differently she would have felt. She worked with incredible dignity and authority and was able to do a very good job despite the difficulty she was having. And that was because people allowed her to do that. And there's been various work done in the States, including by somebody called Stephen Sabat, who has shown that if you can give people with dementia a way to be themselves and to have some autonomy and to be able to take some responsibility about things, it is actually good for them and enables them to have a better quality of life.
Alison Ray is a professor of linguistics at the Center of Language and Communication at Cardiff University in Cardiff in Wales. Thank you.
Thank you.
You can hear other pod episodes at pri.org/language, or of course on iTunes or Stitcher or SoundCloud. And The World in Words has a Facebook page too, and I'm on Twitter. I tweet as Patrick Cox, P-A-T-R-I-C-O-X. I'll be back in a few days. See you then.